Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. Plus, you can buy it online and pick it up in store, getting you outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See store at homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hi, welcome to the NASCAR on NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, here with another post-race edition of the podcast from...
Vegas. We're in Vegas, Nate.
Cup Series edition from Las Vegas Motor Speedway and joined again by Steve Wittart, the NASCAR on NBC analyst. Steve, let's start with Kyle Larson, the winner. And I mentioned Las Vegas Motor Speedway in the odds powered by PointsBet Sportsbook. Kyle Larson was plus 1,000 to win this race. So I guess of the winners we've had so far this year, he would be considered probably the least of the underdogs to have won so far, right?
Yeah, I mean, 10-1. I think that's probably where I would have valued him coming in. I would have told you, if you asked me on Friday, is that a good bet? I would have given you the old man 50-50. If you like him, bet him. If you don't like him, don't bet him. There was nothing I saw that said that Kyle Larson was going to be a standout at Vegas. We knew he ran good at Miami. Tracks are very different. Not a big surprise. You would have remembered we were at Las Vegas if we were still traveling, because you would have spent at least the night on the strip and felt the energy in Las Vegas. And really, that's the two things, my quick takeaways from Las Vegas. Kyle Larson, not only back in victory lane, but in that famed five with the famed five paint scheme that Rick Hendrick's late son, Ricky Hendrick, made famous when he drove. And the second part was just the fans. I didn't get the number. The number perhaps doesn't really matter to me. I'm giving it the old eye test. And the eye test was, after months and months and months of either no fans or severely limited, I believe they still had limitations, but it looked good on TV, which tells me that there was some energy in the crowd. Thank goodness. I think that everyone is ready to see some sporting events. So it was exciting to see the fans.
Yeah, it was good to see. I think, Stevie, the limitation was 15% capacity. And I looked at some of the photos. It looked like, I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 people per section. Certainly the winning drivers, not just in the Cup Series race, but the Xfinity and Truck Series race as well. They acknowledged that crowd. I saw the Supercross race at Daytona National Speedway Saturday night. Same thing when Eli Tomac won, he got to celebrate up near the wall with fans there. And it does seem like, you know, we're getting off a little bit of a tangent here, but to your point, like, it does seem like there's a little bit of a thaw starting to occur that we can all be happy about in motorsports, right?
Well, listen, I love sports. I've made my living in sports. Sports are only great because of the people that cheer it on. You know, while racing in empty stadiums was necessary last year, and I applaud NASCAR for doing it, and I applaud the TV partners for bringing it home for the fan to watch at home, it doesn't matter if it's high school football or the Daytona 500. The people in the stands make the event. It's not the action on the field. The action on the field is the entertainment. The people being entertained is what makes it special. And we've powered through what's been necessary, but I can't wait. If you stand in a booth, you can feel it, Nate. You don't have to see it on the track. You can feel it literally below your feet when you're high above these stadiums and something happens. I'll never forget when Kenseth and Logano get into it at Martinsville that day. I thought the grandstands were coming down. I mean, it was a moment that became bigger because of the fan reaction. So yeah, so the fans were a big deal. Kyle Larson, I think, is a big deal. I don't think anybody wants to discount that. And I know we have a lot to go in, but man, I got big takeaways quick, right? Gibbs, a little better, not great, not awful. I give him a good B-. Penske, I'd probably give them a B+. They seem to be pretty close. Hendrick Motorsports is going to have to get a good solid A, maybe even higher. Their cars were all up front. Stuart Haas, though, of all the big teams, they're the ones that are snapshot Las Vegas farthest behind. Now, that could turn around overnight in Phoenix, but I'm just going to take the sample set in front of me, and the sample set of Las Vegas is has to be disappointing for Stuart Haas Racing.
Yeah, all those topics on my list, Stevie, and I agree with you. Stuart Haas was a stunner, especially with Kevin Harvick starting on the pole and knowing the success he's had there and knowing the way that team started this season. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's start with Kyle Larson. So he misses pretty much the bulk of the 2020 season because he's on indefinite suspension because of a racial slur in an iRacing event. And he gets reinstated last October, gets hired by Hendrick Motorsports. Four races in, does it surprise you that he wins this race so quickly after being out of the car for so long? Or, I mean, we all know his success last year in dirt racing was well documented. It seemed like he had a 50% winning percentage in dirt racing. Is it a surprise that he can just come in and knock all the rust off immediately and win so quickly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a surprise. Not a surprise that he is a winner in 2021. I would definitely take that bet. He's too good, too talented. While he was out of the NASCAR realm, he was in race cars. While they're not the same, I do think it tests the same kind of hand-eye feel. You can't learn how to drive a cup car, but you can at least keep the rust from building by driving other cars. So not a surprise he's a winner, but yes, a surprise in 4 weeks. New organization with Hendrick Motorsports, new crew chief with Cliff Daniels. Just that takes time for any organization. I said this after William Byron. I'll say it again after Kyle Larson. William Byron has a huge upside in the sport. Kyle Larson has a huge upside in the sport. We know what Chase Elliott's already pulled off. I go back to the organizational changes Hendrick Motorsports made during the winter. We could talk about all we want, but there was two things announced. There was a combination with ECR, that is basically the Childress engine group, and the Hendrick engine group got together on development. That was announced, help me, Nate, maybe October, November last year?
Yeah, I think around October, yep.
So that, I think, has to be noted. They're definitely faster at these mile-and-a-half tracks, these restricted horsepower tracks down to 550 with a tapered spacer. And Chad Knaus moving up to assist Jeff Andrews in running the organization. I think Jeff obviously knew what he was doing because they won a championship last year. But now you put Jeff Andrews and Chad Knaus offices side by side running an organization the size of Hendrick Motorsports. It appears that the equipment needed is there for the crew chiefs and the drivers to do what they're going to do. I say that because really top to bottom, other than Chase Elliott's spin, they were all kind of there most of the day. So I think that's a good sign for Hendrick Motorsports. And the reason I keep saying Hendrick is because I don't think it's a Chevrolet thing. I don't see Chip Ganassi up front. Childress, okay. JTG, okay. A lot of okays, but Hendrick was the true standout. So I think that's the big takeaway for me. And bar the door. Remember, Kyle Larson has won before, but he had never won on a mile-and-a-half racetrack. And now he's broken through. I mean, I'll challenge you. Maybe the road courses. Take the 7 road courses out. I'll even tell you to take the 4 speedways out. So that's 11 races. That leaves 25 left. Nate, tell me one race in the next 25 standard races that he can't win because he could go on a heck of a tear, in my opinion.
Well, I'm sure everybody is putting him down now for the Bristol dirt race. Not that they didn't already have him penciled in on that one in a few weeks.
I had him penciled in on the Bristol asphalt race.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was dirt or asphalt. He's one of the few guys that I think making it dirt didn't affect his chance of winning, as silly as that may sound.
No, it's a very fair point. It's a great point you make, too, about the mile-and-a-half racetracks. I believe 9 runner-up finishes before this breakthrough, getting his first victory at a mile-and-a-half track. That was the most runner-up finishes anyone had ever had at a mile-and-a-half track before he gets that win. And now he's got it. And again, great to have you on here to talk about Hendrick Motorsports, Stevie, because you have such knowledge and experience of working inside the walls of that organization. And I think you're right. It wasn't a Chevrolet thing. I mean, the most recent winner at Las Vegas, Kurt Busch, talked after the race about how out the lunch he was. He finished, I think, 20th and really wasn't the ballgame. But now 2 wins in 4 races for Hendrick. They've clearly been the class of the field here through 4 races in the Cup Series. And I thought it was really interesting last night, Stevie. Rick Hendrick said that he feels as if the chemistry has never been better. What do you make about this driver lineup they have now, where there's no Jeff Gordon, there's no Jimmy Johnson, there's no surefire NASCAR Hall of Famer? I mean, I think we all can agree that some of these guys, Chase Elliott's got a championship, Kyle Larson might get one. Some of these guys could eventually be Hall of Famers, but they're all in their 20s. It's a different makeup than the Hendrick Motorsports, I think we know, and certainly you knew when you worked there.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Hendrick Motorsports and the success, you know, it starts with Jeff Gordon, obviously, coming to win some championships. Terry Labonte joined him in that fray in the 90s. Moving into the 2000s, Jimmy Johnson takes the torch and continues to run forward. But I'm not sure they have ever had a stable of drivers so like-minded, so like-positioned. And what I mean by that is there is no veteran. There's not even an elder driver. They're all very young. They have a little bit more mix at crew chiefs, but you look at Cliff Daniels, very young. Rudy Fugle knew in the Cup Series. I don't want to discount what he did outside of Cup, long NASCAR history, but not at the Cup Series. Allen is kind of the old fray when it comes to the guy that's been around there. So, and they're running good. And as I said, Chad moved off the pit box, but into management. So Rick Hendrick, once again, has proven that his business might be, he might be in the car business, but he finds success in the people business.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what this is all about, is he has this magical touch of knowing when to hire from outside or promote from within. You know, Rudy Fugle, that's an outside guy. That's not a Hendrick guy. There are a lot of smart engineers there, but they go outside to get somebody that William Byron is comfortable with. Boom, they strike. Rick Hendrick, in his masterful way, finds a way to get Kyle Larson back into NASCAR in a top seat, finds a way to put people around him to continue to give him the chance to be the best driver he can be. Boom, they strike right away. I think we have zero concern about Chase Elliott going back to victory lane. He's running well all the time. And then I think a little bit, it's fair to say, I don't think it's completely crazy to say Alex Bowman has to find a little bit of his own identity in the 48. It's not a knock on him. He's getting to a 7-time championships car. I mean, that's going to take a little bit of comfort. But I think the success around him isn't added pressure. I actually think the success around him is going to take the nerves off Alex Bowman, right? Because now he knows, okay, these race cars I sent in can win. I would love the ability, which I don't think they're even doing anymore because there's no practice, but to sit in their Tuesday debrief. I'd love a hall pass to go sit in the corner again and be able to compare it to what I heard 15 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, whether it was Hendrick, the Jeff Gordon era, the Jimmy Johnson era, because I would love to see who takes charge or if anyone takes charge, who takes right. the lead in these conversations. I would love to know the inner workings because I don't know the four drivers enough personally to be able to say, oh, this is what happens. You know, Chase is, I guess, the veteran with the most wins in the championship. I won't say quiet, but by no means bullish or any sort of general tendencies. I mean, he's kind of his own guy. And William Byron, very young. And then you have Kyle Larson. Like, I would just love to see how it's run, to see who takes control. In my mind, I see Chad there leading the control. All right, now you talk. I see him running it because that's what he's always done. But that's purely a guess. One of these days, I'm going to have – it's not a good Zoom question. I got to find one of these drivers face-to-face because I want to read their personalities and be like, so break it down. Like, who goes first in the debriefs?
Yeah.
You know, I want to know how they really go through their information.
Well, no, I think that is the big question. When Hendrick talked last night about the chemistry being so great, that's immediately what I thought of. I thought of, well, they don't really have – I mean, Chase Elliott is technically the dean among the driver class there. Because he's been around since 2016. So this is what is his sixth season, but I mean, he's still only 25 years old. And as you mentioned, his demeanor is not leader, not certainly not in the Chad Knaus style, but even in the Jeff Gordon style, where I would think when you were there and was Gordon sort of the leader in debriefs back in that era?
Yeah, and he was, and it wasn't because he expected to be or wanted to be. He was just a guy that had so much knowledge over so many different race cars, whether it was the new car, old car, this engine, whatever you were changing. I mean, just look at Speedway packages. He's run fins on the roof. He's run wings. He's run spoilers. So he's just always has such a great insight. And he's so humble that he is the first guy to raise his hand and be like, car was way better than me today. If I should have done this better or that better or this better. And that humble approach allowed him to be able to raise his hand when it wasn't him and say, hey guys, I'm not going to say this to the public, but we're lacking it under their hood. Or Steve, we're way behind on aerodynamics. I can just tell. Like he could very non-aggressively point to a direction. And just be clear, when you point, you're pointing a 600-pound gorilla. You're pointing 600 people, pointing all of this budget, all of this resource. So it's wonderful when you head in a direction. But man, if it's the wrong direction, you know how long it is to get turned and start going a different way? And that's what really amazes me more than anything is Hendrick has now run well at both mile and a halfs. They're running well. I mean, I'm not going to take it up. For the last 4 or 5 years, there was not cracks in the armor, but there were opportunities to disagree with their performance, to say they weren't as good as they, quote, once were. Whether they believed it, heard it, or didn't care what anyone said, they once again encircled the wagons, and once again, they have the target on their back.
You make a great point about the 800-pound gorilla, 500-person company that a driver has to lead in those debriefs. And this is not meant as a knock on Jimmy Johnson at all, because they won the championship with Jimmy Johnson. Hendrick did the first year after Jeff Gordon retired. But I think the narrative that you kind of heard, Stevie, the last few years was he was struggling on track. Jimmy Johnson was, and he was probably being looked to as the de facto default leader in those debriefs because, hey, he's the seven-time champion. He's the guy with all the victories. And I wonder, you know, you just said it. I mean, I didn't think about it until you just said it, but maybe Chad Knaus now sort of being in charge of that room and coming in at a time when there is nobody that he has to really defer to, it really could be like an ideal situation for that kind of transition to that leadership style, that, hey, seven-time championship crew chief now leading an entire organization and doesn't have to worry about a driver whose toes he's stepping on. It seems like a really good fit for all of that.
Yeah, listen, I learned a lot of lessons when I worked at Hendrick Motorsports, but one lesson I learned is if Chad Knaus ever did crack the notebook open around you, you'd need to pay attention because there was no one ever that I have ever been around that's better with a race car. People can have their opinions, whether they like him or don't like him, his opinions on aggression when it comes to the rule. I mean, there's a lot of opinions you may have, but no one can present a case to me that he's not one of the best, if not the best ever, to get a car to perform to the top level. And I mean, when you're in that 99.9 percentile, he can find that last 10th of a percent, which is the hardest percent to find. So if he has found a comfort in his new position to manage the group, but also support people doing the job he did so successfully for so long, and that's going to be the real question. The challenge will be when the dip's going to come, right? Nobody's great for 36 weeks. So enjoy it while you're up. Learn while you're up. And when the dip comes, make sure you have a good plan. But right now, they don't have a dip. Right now, they're doing what they need to do. More importantly, they got 2 of 4 in the playoffs.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability. Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Keselowski mentioned that as well last night. He says, you know, racing is cyclical. Of course, it goes in waves like this. And of course, Hendrick is not going to be on top forever, just like Penske couldn't be on top forever at Vegas, where they came in with however many consecutive victories. I want to ask you one more thing on Hendrick. I want to follow up on what you said about the driving styles being similar. Is that a case of, hey, all the kids today kind of drive the same way? I mean, granted, like they kind of came up differently. I mean, Kyle Larson comes up on dirt tracks, as does Bowman to a certain degree, but Byron and Elliott certainly came up pavement racing and late models type racing. Is there something to that, that they're all around the same age, so they sort of look at things and maybe want things the same way?
I don't know their driving styles. Without looking at the data, I don't know. It's a tough question to ask because we saw the 24 and the 5 running up front racing each other. Well, they could have been totally different setups. We don't know. They could have been nothing alike. There were two crew chiefs now smiling at me as an analyst going, he has no idea. We were so far different on the spectrum. I think the bigger thing is that now that we have seen this rules package of reduced horsepower and high downforce, they have found the right package for both Miami, a track where you were out of the gas after just a few laps, to Las Vegas, where I think I heard Larry Mack say yesterday, Brad Keselowski hadn't lifted in 20 laps looking at the data. Yeah. So I only bring that up because I don't think it's as much. I honestly don't think driving style is as important as communication style and approach. And I can only look at it in my own life, right? When I want to talk to someone around my age or around my experience, it's very easy for me to communicate to them because we have a lot of the same references. Well, when you look at the current driver lineup of Hendrick, it doesn't seem like it would be very hard for the four to hang out, right? I mean, they're all race car drivers. They're all very young. You have one married in Kyle Larson, but married very young with a couple small kids. They have a few single guys. But it wouldn't shock me to post-COVID, when we're all allowed to go out to roll into a Mexican restaurant or one of these races, look down and see four guys sharing chips and salsa, right? I'd be like, yeah, they should hang out. Look, they're all the same age. They all work together. They're all like, they're like four cube mates at any other sort of company. Like, I know that sounds silly, but that's kind of what I see there, right? I mean, it's no different if they were four hardworking factory guys that just said, hey, it's break time. And these four would circle around the water cooler. And I think that's what I see, is I see the four of them traveling together, spending time together, sharing meals together, not because they're supposed to, because it's easy and it's comfortable. I could be totally off base, but we'll see. These are the things that I hate about pandemic living, because, you know, pre-pandemic, people would be amazed how much I learned from being in the town. I picked on you at the start. You forgot we were in Las Vegas only because you weren't in Las Vegas. Yep. If you'd have stayed on the Vegas Strip and you'd have drove in and out of the town, you would have remembered right away. It's a little bit of that. It's the same for me. I learned as much with cars on track and practice as I do spending the week at the racetrack. I walk through the bus lot. I see whose kids are playing with whose kids, whose drivers are hanging out with who. I go to the local restaurants. I see who's going out to dinner to get, like, you understand people's kind of habits. So it's purely a guess, but I could see the habit of those four drivers with a little leadership. If I know Mr. Hendrick, he'll nudge them together too. But it wouldn't shock me that those four would hang out.
We make observations through osmosis, so to speak. And that has been missing in this pandemic existence of trying to cover NASCAR from afar. But one thing that we saw at Vegas, I mean, the results sheet, I think, pretty much laid it out exactly. You had Kyle Larson in first, Hendrick Chevrolet. Second, Brad Keselowski, Penske Ford, as you mentioned, probably B-plus right now. Third place, Kyle Busch, Joe Gibbs Racing, as you mentioned, probably right below Penske. I mean, the 1-2-3 finishing order is pretty much the pecking order right now for teams in the garage.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen, top 10, Hendrick car, Penske car, Gibbs car, Gibbs car, Penske car, Gibbs car, Gibbs car, Hendrick car, Penske car. There's your top nine. I mean, three organizations took the top nine. Yes, Eric Jones in 10th. Bravo. That's a great run for the 43. I'm not knocking them. That's an outstanding run. Eric Jones, who had a little bit of a bumpy start to the season, found a way to put it together to finish a great race. He's in 10th, JTG in 11th, RCR in 12th. Those peripheral teams right there battling for the top 10s. That's where they need to be. Yeah, what do you want for parity? Three manufacturers, three organizations, they fill up the top 10. If I asked you, who do you think the best drivers are in the garage area? Okay, who are we missing? Probably Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick. But those are the guys. Those are the playoff runs. Those are the ones. Without practice, you're going to circle on your list. I bet if we would go back to our friends at PointsBet, those were probably all of the top 8 or 9, 10 favorite drivers to win this event. So there wasn't a lot of shocking results inside the top 10.
That lack of practice, I think, continues to have an impact on Kyle Busch, who, even though he finished third, wasn't happy on the radio during the race, Stevie, and talked afterward a lot about how he's going up to Salisbury, where Toyota Racing Development headquarters are, and he's on that simulator two or three times a week to try to make up for this lack of practice, working with his new crew chief, Ben Bayshore. But Kyle was talking after the race, he was kind of saying, like, the problem that they're having, again, problem for a third place finisher in the most recent race, is they can't get things perfectly correlated between the simulator and real world. Like, I think he was explaining that, like, hey, on the simulator, my car is like a 6 or 7 loose, and then on the track, it's only a 2 loose, or vice versa. How do they fix that? How does Kyle Busch fix that without having that on-track experience?
Man, you hope that you can get enough knowledge about whether the tire is sometimes the magic elixir in the math. The car can be modeled. Trust me, they can model the car. They can model the aerodynamics, the loading, the car. The tracks are very accurately modeled. The tire is the area that perhaps is the hardest to model because there's so many different factors. I don't want to bore everybody with the details, but it would appear that when teams come and go, the tire or the style of tire that Goodyear brings can have a direct correlation with who's good on it and who isn't. So you got to remember, they're the shoes. We talk about horsepower, we talk about aerodynamics, we talk about drivers, talk about pit crews, talk about money, talk about everything in the world. Four things touch the ground, just four. Four Goodyear tires, the only thing that touch the racetrack. Those four are your exact correlation. So I look at it like this. Some drivers get on a set of tires and it's like they're barefoot and they can feel everything underneath them. It's very clear whether they're on gravel or on grass or on stone. It's either smooth or it's bumpy. Other drivers get on the same tire and it's like they're wearing big, thick platform shoes on a trampoline. and they just don't know where the ground is. Try walking on a trampoline, right? You don't know if it's up or if it's down or if it's this or it's that. And it's that's the way I can correlate it to drivers, right? Some guys go in and they know every inch where their car is, what the car needs, and how the tire reacts. Other guys just don't have that feel. So the question I have for these Toyota guys, specifically Kyle Busch, is, you know, he did finish third, Denny Hamlin fourth, Martin Truex sixth, Christopher Bell seventh. I would be concerned for Kyle Busch if he was five spots behind his teammates. But throw a blanket over him, you know, third to seventh. And they kind of ran there, blanket over him. So I think the bigger question for me is, can Kyle Busch stay patient as they try to improve these things? Because to your point, you say third good, Kyle Busch said third bad.
Really,
that's what
bad.
We love about yeah. Kyle Busch. That's why everybody asks all the time, if you could crew chief for one guy, who would it be? It's hard to not put Kyle Busch in your list. Now, they may want to drag him out of the car by his helmet after the end and be like, dude, you're such a hothead. But the counter is, never would I have doubted his effort every single lap. Yeah. You know, I don't mind not like what he says on the radio. I say this about Kyle Busch all the time. I would say it if he was on this podcast. Listen, Kyle, you know, I don't love what you say or how you say it or this, that thing, but I could never say you aren't giving your all. I don't know, there's just something kind of great about that, right? It's almost back to like high school athletics or college athletics. What do they say about college basketball? Why is March Madness so great? Because every kid on the court is giving it all, every bit, right? That's kind of Kyle Busch. He's like our college athlete, right? Like he doesn't run out of bounds. He turns it back upfield for another half a yard, or like he is all in, and it can be taken incorrectly or correctly, but I don't have worry about him. I think that correlation is a concern, but all you can do is continue to have a very good plan, go to the racetrack, execute, and then come back and circle back through. And I'm sure they're doing all of those things. Got to remember, throw this car away in 33 more weeks. At some point, you have to ask yourself, how much money are you going to spend trying to correlate this car?
And that's a great point. That's another point that Brad Keselowski made last night, that some teams clearly are doubling down on 2021, but some, I think, are looking at this as a throwaway year, and they're already looking at 2022.
So wait, there was no parts freeze? Last week, we had a parts freeze conversation. Now there's no parts freeze?
Yeah, right. I know. So about Kyle, one more point there. I think you're right. It's great to have a guy who just wants to be the best at everything all the time. And how could you quibble with that? But at the same time, if you're Ben Bayshore, you're a new crew chief in the Cup Series, you've won the Clash. You've given Kyle, I think, a better car than he had for the most of last year. And he finishes third in race four. Do you think there's a little part of Ben Bayshore is like, oh man, like what more can I do? You know, I know this guy is a two-time champion. I know he wants to be the best all the time, but like, you know, cut me just a little slack. Or maybe Kyle is cutting that slack behind closed doors and we just don't see it.
I think it's completely unfair for us to correlate what we see publicly to what they work on privately. I think Ben Bayshore knew exactly what he was signing up for when he signed up. Yeah. Kyle Busch is not Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He doesn't change personalities. Whether you like his personality or not, it's very consistent. Don't confuse the two. I think it's actually easier to work with a guy with a very consistent personality, regardless of how perhaps aggressive it is at times, than kind of one that's passive aggressive and you don't know which guy you're going to get. I mean, with Kyle Busch, you know who you're going to get. I mean, it's very clear. So I think Ben Bayshore knew what he was signing up for. And I think taking anything that's said publicly and having any sort of correlation to what happens privately would be completely unfair and unfounded. Because when I look at Kyle Busch's resume, apparently everything people don't like about how he acts and what he says on the radio doesn't correlate to anything, because his resume is Hall of Fame. And it's year after year after year. I know they had a little bit of a down year last year, but they still find a way to victory lane. So I don't see the correlation. I think it's going to be fine.
Let's finish up here, Stevie, on where things are not fine. Stewart Haas Racing. I mean, you mentioned it at the top. We go back to those odds powered by PointsBet Sportsbook. When I taped Splash and Go last week, this was my pick. I thought for sure Kevin Harvick starting on pole was going to be a no-brainer. Can't miss. You know, he had some problems early on in the race, had some damage, fell back in the pack, and then just never had it. And his teammates, I mean, Cole Custer said they threw the kitchen sink at it and never ran the top 15. Almirola wasn't a factor. Chase Briscoe wasn't a factor. What do you make of what happened with Stewart Haas Racing? And is there cause for concern there at this point?
Well, the bigger concern I have is they've lost one of their veteran drivers. Clint Bowyer's now in the booth. I bring that up not for driving talent. This has nothing to do with driving talent, because I think all the guys behind the wheel of Stewart Haas Racing can drive. The question is, I don't see how Chase Briscoe could give you any sort of feedback specific to Cup as he's learning the Cup Series. Not a knock on him. Welcome to being a rookie. Cole Custer, why he was a winner a year ago, arguably it's only a sophomore year. He's still learning very quickly. Eric Almirola, you would hope you could get some feedback from, but he was the one that got in the wall and didn't really get a whole lot of laps, or he got some laps, probably not enough. So Kevin Harvick is really your guy. You have to lean on Kevin Harvick. And you know, the struggle is, I'll be quite honest, if Kevin Harvick runs third, do we have the same SHR conversation? Because I would say it's been very consistent like that for a year or two now. Kevin Harvick has been a far step above. Go back to my statement that everybody doesn't want to hear. The top nine, right? Like, I mean, if you did their average finish, I would say it's probably almost exactly alike, looking at where they all kind of total up. So that, I think, is my bigger concern. And maybe we have seen it coming, and maybe it's been masked by Kevin Harvick's amazing ability with Rodney Childers to perform, because they have been spectacular. So I'm not knocking them, because as you said, Brad Keselowski says it's cyclical, and it is, and they're in a little bit of a down. The question is, though, how much help can Kevin get from his young teammates? Not because they're not talented. They're fast. You put them in a fast car, they're fast. Can they give the information needed to the smart men and women at SHR, right? And well, I guess we're getting ready to see what kind of help the Blue Oval might could carry over, because Penske's good and SHR is not as good. And it'd be interesting to see if they can close that gap.
Be interesting to see at Phoenix Raceway. That's where the next race is. I did remember where the Cup Series is headed next. We won't have you for the next post-race podcast, taking a little bit of a break, but really want to say thanks for being around. These first four episodes, hugely well-received, and we appreciate your insight as always, Stevie.
Man, I love it. I love talking racing. I love watching racing. I can't wait to get into the booth where I could see it in person. As great as the TV coverage is, there's nothing like in person. I'd say that even from a TV guy. If you're near a track and you can get out to the track and tickets are available, nothing beats in person. I can't wait to get back there myself.
Our thanks again to NASCAR and NBC analyst Steve Letarte for joining us once again to recap the Cup race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. As you heard me mention, Stevie will be taking a break from the NASCAR and NBC podcast after Phoenix, but I promise he'll be back. And in the meantime, I'll be sure to wrangle up one of our other analysts for next week. Thankfully, we have quite the deep stable at NBC Sports, so I'm sure you can look forward to hearing the sharp insights from one of our former drivers, whether it be Dale Jarrett or Kyle Petty or perhaps Jeff Burton. Next Monday, after Phoenix, stay tuned. Thanks, as always, to NBC Sports producers Aaron Feldstein and Emily Conboy for helping with the coordination and recording of this podcast. The NASCAR NBC podcast is available wherever you download podcasts. Please leave us a rating and review to help spread the word. And any feedback you can send to me on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR NBC podcast.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.